No, does not.
I'm thinking about where, because I certainly agree with you on the roadblock thing and that sort of thing. But if it was incidental, I wouldn't want them to interpret that if it was incidental and because they're broken immigration law, you couldn't arrest them or hold them. Then I would think that would be entirely wrong.
In the bill itself.
Be like I'm saying that bank robbery is a federal offense, which it is, and if you run across one, you turn it loose. I would think you'd want somewhere in there incidental. So if you were arrested for something else and it's come up, that you can still hold it.
Like I said before, the law says that if I arrest someone for violating a crime and I bring them to jail, they can be detained for 24 hours. Now, during that 24-hour period, the officers can call immigration. Immigration can come and view that person, pick them up, or do whatever they want. But if they don't come within 24 hours, then the local law enforcement officers have no jurisdiction to hold them beyond that unless they charge them with a crime or something.
And the bill does indicate that the only whose only offense is that they are persons of foreign citizenship. So it does say that to limit those kind of activities.
You wouldn't stop the person in the first place. That's correct. You would not detain them. That's correct.
Before you stop them or not, you got to stop them on suspicion. They can stop you and I on suspicion. I certainly don't want to hamper our law enforcement people from that standpoint. And if they do stop them for incidental, as Senator Ripper mentioned, and they find out that not subject for them, they just let them go on down the road. But my gosh, you can't keep them, or I don't think you can.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On that issue there, like I said, we in no ways mean to, like I said, hamper the enforcement of any kind of criminal code. If there is suspicion for a traffic violation or a criminal activity, then they law enforcement officials still have obviously the responsibility to enforce that, and if it happens to be coincidental that they find an alienship or residency issue, that's part of the serendipity fine, I guess you'd call it. But if what we're trying to limit is somebody just simply stopping somebody saying, well, we're trying to question your immigration status.
Yes.
Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
If they did stop somebody on suspicion of something else and they find out that they don't have a card, that they don't belong here, then they can't do anything with them either.
Yes.
When they call somebody up and have them go chase them down again.
Well, that's what the 24-hour detention is meant for. They can hold it for 24 hours and then inquire with the INS as to... They let them enforce immigration law.
Have you compiled any figures or any statistics other than a court case or two here? Do you have any statistics about people being harassed and all this other? I suppose there's some of that, and I would presume that maybe there's more than I suspect, maybe less. I don't know.
Well, I don't think we have any numbers right in front of us for you, but I think if you will simply recall to the last summers when the harvest season was on, immigration would have, in fact, set up roadblocks for a number of counties.
I never was ever in one of those. Of course, I live in eastern Oregon, in Baker County. But I used to live in Mount Hill County, and I've never seen that. And
it's become an increasing
with the job. There's a jobs program that's been initiated on the federal level, and with that, in cooperation with that, you see these kind of operations also happening in terms of roadblocks and stoppages. This is a new kind of an activity.
You know, I lived in Mount Hill County when they had the Rochero program, and people had cards. Is there any activity as far as your commissioners are concerned that you would be supportive of some sort of a program? I mean, take the positive side rather than something like this to make these people.
Well, I think right now,
so that they wouldn't be breaking the law in some fashion. Is there any thoughts about that at all? Green cards or whatever they were.
In terms of the immigration problem in general?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a long.
Yes.
That's a tough issue. It is a national federal issue, and I think we've tried to basically get a consensus among our membership, and I think we'd probably have some varying amounts of support for given issues. The Simpson-Mazzoli bill is before Congress right now. I think you would find a number of our members that are have opposition to some of the things here, because it does require that a certain segment of the population be a card-carrying population. And that seems to be, you know, one of the detriments to the bill itself. But I think the Hispanic community, as all other American citizens, realize that there is a problem that has to be dealt with, and we'd like to be a part of that solution. And I think this simply protects us in the meantime.
You think this is positive?
Well, we believe so. I think it simply protects American citizens from...
That's hard to argue.
It really is, especially when you talk about the Hispanic community saying, why am I being stopped?
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right.
And it's hard to argue as to why.
Yes. There's nothing more that we need to know about the federal law except to say that they are the ones that the feds are the ones that enforce immigration laws. That's correct. You know, I guess other ethnic minorities.
You find Indians also being asked.
Yeah, that's right.
Indians are being asked as to their citizenship.
American Indians
are being asked. Their similarity,
whether they are Hispanics or, in fact, Sioux.
They're being asked, they're mistakenly being taken as being Mexican.
Yes.
So they're being stopped also, and then they say they're not. The idea is, why are they being stopped? They're being stopped based on what they look like. Possibly Filipino, I don't know.
I think you'd find a number of ethnic groups that have an appearance of a Mexican heritage are being stopped.
Police, sheriffs, or state police would not be allowed to participate in any sort of a roadblock or any sort of search.
That's correct.
Whose only purpose was
to
establish a residency or alienage. I think there's a number, we talked here about roadblocks.
What do the illegal aliens? What do they use for identification?
I don't know.
I would have, just from a common background, I think you would general knowledge type of thing, see that they have the ability to get their hands on documentation and identification that suits them for employment as well as.
But on showing this, then there is some. We've got two people, and each one of them have documents. They have driver's license, social security cards, and whatever, what I would have in my bill.
That's correct.
And they both show them. Then what? Are they both detained until they can ascertain whether or not these are actual
I don't know how they do that.
I think that only underscores the complexity of the issue that I think an immigration service, which has the background and the knowledge to deal with those, should deal with those issues instead of having some local county or state law enforcement who is really not aware of all the ramifications. Try to take on those kinds of issues.
Because I think you're very correct. Most people, including myself, maybe yourself, do not carry with them anything that proves where they were born. There's no document that we normally carry that would show that. So the process that most immigration officials go through is ask just a questioning process, and it's a lot of instinct, I think, on their part.
Yeah.
Where were you born? Where was your mother born?
Yeah.
What was your mother's maiden name?
Yeah.
Where were you raised? What school did you go to? Those kinds of questions. How long? What are you doing here? How long have you been in this area? Just a general questioning procedure.
What does California have? Does California have the same type of laws?
I am not aware of any.
I wonder, they have many more people and many more problems like this, I would suppose.
I can only give you some firsthand information on the situation I'm aware of. I was born and raised in the Imperial Valley, which is right across the border from Mexico. First of all, there has been several federal limitations as to how far from the border you can actually ask questions regarding alienage. And what is now happening down there is that unless, there is a criminal activity, your local law enforcement agencies, my father was a police chief down there until a year ago, they did not participate. They would, in fact, if they stopped somebody for drunkenness or for a traffic violation, would, in fact, detain them if they felt there was some suspicion for the internal.
But there wasn't a law.
No. I am not aware. I'm not sure if they acted from statutory requirements or just from instinct.
I guess to further the chairman's question, a legal alien, not an illegal one, a legal one that's come in here to work on a work order or whatever, do they have a special card?
Yeah, residency, temporary, but they have a temporary
just
card.
Just a temporary
operation
residency card.
Of some sort.
They would be under the laws as to as far as how long you're allowed to stay in Oregon before you get a license, an Oregon license. What is that? I don't know. It's 3 months, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
If you're here more than 3 months, you have to get an Oregon license for your car rather than continuing to
another state.
I'm sure they would fall under the same guidelines.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
May I ask a question?
Sure.
I guess the more I read this, the more concerned I get. The Immigration Naturalization Service, if they requested either the state or local authorities to help them in enforcing their laws, the way I'm reading this absolutely prevents them from doing that. Is that the intention?
Their role would be that of maintaining order in the area. To make sure that no crimes were committed. And that's correct. Again, in checking with the Immigration Naturalization Service, they had no problem with that. They are very aware that their responsibility is to enforce the law and not to have local law enforcement officers do that. So they have no problem with it. They are aware of it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
go ahead. Something like if in the height of the growing season, the naturalization people simply could not be around everywhere where they were needed. Then if the police, if the immigration people asked the state or city police to help them, then under the terms of this bill, they would be prohibited from doing so.
That's true. They would only... Let's say that they were called, asked to assist in a particular geographic area, that local law enforcement officers could come, perhaps direct traffic.
Yeah, but there wasn't any. Yeah. It was just a case of no riot.
Yes. Yes.
That's correct. That's correct.
I was fortunate enough to to have an extended trip into Mexico on three different occasions. The last time I spent 5 months there, and I had a big sign in the corner of the window that said Turista. And I guess that's how they told me from the natives.
That was one way.
But it said tourist, right? You know, the big sign about this big, you know, it said tourist, you know. And I don't know, maybe we need something like that. I certainly understand what, I hear what you're saying, and we're certainly going to take this under advisement. It's a difficult problem, and yet a very simple one in the eyes of someone who believes that he is being harassed and all this other, you know. I'm an American citizen. I was born in Amarillo, Texas, but I'm an American citizen, same as you are. You know, I mean, I can see where, you know, if a person has no identification, then it's a better part of valor, I suppose, is to try and evade it some way and understand the economic conditions in Mexico. Not as well as I perhaps should, but I think I do understand them. The last time I was there, pesos were 14 and a half, I believe, to one. Now they're what, 200, 300?
Well, I think
they were 147,
yeah.
And I was there last month.
It's different. And I understand, I know how difficult it is. Yeah. It was difficult then. It must be 10 times worse now. And, it's we aren't going to take any action on this bill today, but I do appreciate you coming, and I think I have a much, much better understanding of it than I did before, even though we had some very heated debate on the floor of the House, and it might be that we will have to see if we can get the El Presidente of the Senate to take another look at this and see if it shouldn't go to, you know, to Senate Judiciary instead of the Ways and Means.
Is the Ways and Means, this is a question,
yes.
If I may ask. I don't know,
yes,
if this is
of course,
time.
Please do.
Let's say that the Ways and Means determines that there is no real fiscal impact,
yes,
with this bill. Is it appropriate for the Ways and Means to ask the Senate President to refer it to Judiciary?
I suppose we could, but I don't know. I don't know. Yes, I think you can ask. I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't want to comment on that. I wouldn't be above asking him, let's put it that way. Did you want to testify?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Why don't you just come up, and you just stay right there, both of you, and you just come up. Have you... say that. Oh, yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Tiffany. I'm the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. I would like to briefly indicate to you that this bill contains a policy issue that will probably need to be addressed sooner or later, and that is that the Oregon's Farm Labor Contractor Statute does make it an unlawful practice for a farm labor contractor or a tree planting contractor to knowingly employ a person not legally present in this country. This bill, in effect, would render that section, as far as the enforcement of that section, inoperative, in that we in the division necessarily need to attempt to detect who is or is not a legal alien or an illegal alien in order to enforce that particular provision. So I simply bring that to your attention,
yes,
to indicate that it is a policy issue and probably will have to be addressed.
And we discussed this at some length when we were looking at labor and industry's budget. I recall not this particular bill, but the issue, as you've just stated and as we've been talking about here. And I remember it's very, very difficult. And I remember one question that I asked, do you actually go out into the hinterlands, into the brush, and look and make inquiries to discover if, yes, in fact, this labor contractor is employing illegal aliens? And I remember the discussion, and we had it at some length.
Yes.
And I think the point you made, no doubt, is a valid one, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask Sue to make a comment or two about the fiscal impact, and then we'll close the hearing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd explain, I guess, why I called it non-fiscal. The effect of the bill itself, I don't believe there's any law enforcement agency, state or local, that will either hire or fire based upon this bill. In other words, their staffing level, their efforts are going to remain the same. I've called it non-fiscal for that reason. In listening to the witnesses, they have indicated maybe legal action against the local officers or the state itself for performing these activities. Apparently, it's already illegal, and the effect of passing this bill won't change that. It may be illegal according to Oregon law as well as federal law, but the liability is still there. So I don't think the bill itself does have a fiscal impact as such.
Thank you, Sue. I want to ask one more question before we close the hearing. Your commission, Hispanic Commission, have you had a delegation, or have you made inquiries, or have you got together with, in particular, those sheriffs in the Willamette Valley here, where your offices are located? Your offices are here in Salem, aren't they?
I just want to clarify one point. We are the Hispanic Political Action
Political,
Committee.
Well, okay.
There's also Hispanic.
And the commission. You're the commission, you're the action.
No, we're both
I got
Hispanic.
Okay, well, whatever.
And we both deal rather closely with the Hispanic Commission.
Well, then do you deal rather closely with the sheriffs in the local areas, with the Salem, and have you discussed with them the federal law, and have you suggested to them that, you know, that a great many of the people of Hispanic origin are in fact American citizens, same as anybody else? You know, that's I guess that's a good question, I think.
In response to a number of questions that some of these present sheriffs were candidates for a sheriff's office, I think their unanimous response was, well, we would have other things we should be doing, you know,
yeah,
other than this.
Yeah.
And really, that they really didn't see any priority in doing these kind of activities, and found themselves having no need to do those. And that was Chuck Foster here in Salem. Also, there have been meetings with the Hispanic community and the Washington County Sheriff's Office,
yeah,
regarding their involvement. And I think it was a good one there, in the sense that instead of going to a litigation, they went to a communication route and said, we are concerned about this activity, and we, you know, would like to know about, you know, how we can resolve this issue about American citizens being stopped and asked. And,
yeah,
and I think at that time they resolved that issue, and I don't think that they'll be participating. But like I said, those are the only situations I'm directly familiar with. And I think they just simply find it, you know, that is not their role, and they find themselves, especially in these times with fiscal cutbacks.
Yes, sure.
So that they'd rather be doing something else.
Of course.
And staying out of hot water at the same time.
All right. Thank you both
very much.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? If not, we will close it.
Just a point of information. Do we have any ideas to what the route will be, the timelines will be, as to, obviously we are concerned with some timelines here.
I can't give you any answer to that. We will take it under advisement. If we have another hearing, you will be notified for that.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Yes. We close the hearing on 2450, and we'll go immediately to 2569. And somebody's going to get Representative Cooley. John, you want to come first and tell us about
that? Is this the same one we heard?
We didn't have a hearing on it, Senator Hurd. We discussed it in relationship to the fire marshal budget. And we didn't have the bill before us at that time, but we did discuss it. And I think at that time you indicated your feelings about it, and I recall them very, very explicitly, but, Senator. All right. Let's see, who do we have signed up beside Uncle Tom? Or do we have a? Is anybody on that?
2450, there's no 2569.
All right, John, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, my name is John McCulley. I'm representing a group called the Oregon Independence Day Association, which is a group of Oregon wholesalers of fireworks who are interested in seeing some changes in the fireworks laws in Oregon. I just want to take a few minutes to discuss the problem that is addressed by House Bill 2569, because we do indeed have, I think, a fairly serious problem with fireworks in the state of Oregon. I don't know, I guess this is an appropriate time of year to be discussing this bill, because if you have noticed the media blitz that is occurring now from Washington, there are many firms in Washington who are advertising the sale of their fireworks primarily to Oregon residents. Now, Oregon has become a haven for illegal fireworks. There are a couple, this is a mailer that was sent to resident, happened to be in Clackamas County, advertising the holiday sale over the Christmas holidays, M70s, M81s, Chinese aerials, all sorts of explosive and aerial devices, which are definitely more dangerous fireworks. The problem that we have in Oregon has come about, I think, primarily because of the Washington law.
Yes, John, excuse me. And I'm going to interrupt you, John, and I know Representative Hooley has another committee, and I'd like to have her make some comments now. And she's requested this time, and I certainly want to extend that courtesy to her, and then John will take up with
that.
Yes, Representative Hooley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Darlene Hooley from District 27. I fully support this bill. I happen to have two children, ages 11 and 13, and I am concerned about safety, and because of my concern for the safety of my own children, as well as everyone else that uses fireworks, is why I want this bill. And if you will look at all the statistics, you will find that these are safer than some of the other things that they currently use that are legal in Oregon. You look at what other states allow and look at their safety records compared to Oregon's, you will find those states have a better safety record. I've seen all kinds of kids and adults with illegal types of fireworks, which include just about everything at this time, and they're starting right now. And I think we're forcing them to be illegal in their activities because there's really very little to celebrate with legally. I believe if they were allowed a greater variety, even though they're just the colorful fountains and spinners, sparklers, torches, and wheels, not the explosive aerial varieties such as cherry bombs, firecrackers, and rockets, I believe they would be less inclined to search out the illegal explosive varieties that are dangerous. And I have to tell you my final reason for supporting this bill. As I said earlier, I have a son by the name of Chad who's 13. And when I was elected the first time, the night of election, or the next day rather, when we were picking up lawn signs, he comes up and he says, Mom, said, now you're the one that can help make or change laws, aren't you? And I said, yes. And he said, well, why don't you change the firework laws? And I was not willing to do it my first time, last time, but I am this time. And I said, he said to me, if I didn't accomplish anything else this time in Salem, that we should make the 4th of July a real celebration and make it legal for kids to have really neat fireworks instead of the dull, boring stuff we have now. But I have seen, I live in a neighborhood with lots of children, and I can tell you firsthand, last year at a 4th of July picnic, family picnic that we have every year, that every child between the ages of about 7 and 21 have illegal fireworks that they can go across the state and buy, the state borders and buy, that they get from Montana, that they get from Idaho, and a variety of other places. And it's not the kids that get them. Often it's the parents that bring them back from Mexico, bring them back from Arizona, bring them back from wherever they've been. And I am not advocating the dangerous explosive types, only those that stay in the ground, that are more colorful, instead of the little smoke bombs they have and the sparklers.
Any questions for Representative Hooley?
Thank only you. This expert to all the thank statistics. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hooley.
Thank you.
I was discussing the problem, and I think Representative Hooley outlined it very well, because
it's not even going to come to you in the first instance. He's just going to...
No, those people are going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
That's the bootlegger that comes in without any...
Made for funds, $500.
This is not a $500 he made earlier.
Yes, sir.
25, whatever it is, right now it's five.
But by adding the word possess, that will hopefully at least give them some power to enforce. You know, enforcement is still, of course, the major problem. I suppose we could spend millions of dollars to try to stop fireworks, but I think in the priority list of criminal activity, that might be fairly low.
This is a mixed bag.
You aren't going to be enforcing anything. All you're going to do is be making out some paperwork and taking $5 or $500. That's all you're going to do. You're not going to be enforcing anything.
Our field deputies stationed strategically around the state start about this particular time of the year and start making inspection of stands for proper devices for first the permit and for... sales and devices.
Other duties, so I mean, they
well, no, we do a lot of things. Yes,
yeah, sure.
This fee increase right now is not self-supporting. What it would do is allow us to bring people in, bring as many people in, and be able to have staff in there. Granted, with all the other activities, our limited staff.
Is there any restrictions on the sale of these things? The new bill goes June 22nd to July 6th. You got something like that? Is that in the law now?
No. Now you can buy...
Sell them year-round?
Yeah. The devices that are not fireworks, sparklers and smoke-producing by snakes, are to be sold year-round. The only thing we do is have some rules in place on the way to store them. They are Class C explosives. They are combustible materials.
Yeah.
But we don't regulate when they're sold or how they're sold. Don't want to.
Move this thing out without anybody here.
You gotta have three, and you gotta have a senator.
We'll get Jay. We'll recess.
Check.
Where's Uncle Jack?
He was come out of that other meeting just a minute ago.
He said,
I read this bill,
or the record.
Yeah.
Where were we, Dan?
You were talking about amending the bill.
Bill what?
Extend.
Well, maybe you weren't. We were talking about amending the bill when you left. I don't know.
Both of us are recommending an amendment to the
that
bill.
That is what?
What I understand, both of us support an amendment on page 2, line 29.
Oh, they take out
to go 20, delete 20 and go to 500, and then specifically, our organization is talking about deleting 20 on page 4, line 29, and going back to 10 for the local organization.
Oh, all right. Do you have any objections? Anybody on the committee have any objections to those amendments? Hearing none, well, we will accept those amendments. And we are going to adjourn momentarily. Wait until tomorrow at the suggestion of my co-chairman, and give Senator Hurd an opportunity to be back. And with that, thank you both for your time. Yes, I want to find it. Does anybody else want to testify on this little firecracker?
Okay. All right, Dan. Fiscal impact statement, it's, as I indicated earlier, a wash insofar as the state fire marshal is concerned. Does this bill have any impact on local jurisdictions, rural fire districts?
No. There used to be a statutory return back, and that's been deleted to make the bill effective, and there's no impact on that government.
Mr. Chair, you should note for the record that that was a policy decision made by the Judiciary Committee, in that they got a list of the checks that were rebated back from the state fire marshal's office to various fire districts throughout the state, and found out that many of those checks were for $3 and $4, $5, $10, which was more in processing costs than the amount of the check. So the Judiciary Committee determined that all monies coming in from this would go directly to the state fire marshal's office, and that if a local fire district wanted to have an additional fee, that was their decision.
Okay, I understand that, but how about the additional, is there any additional enforcement responsibility on local jurisdictions as a result of this bill that's going to result in costs to them?
Technically, yes, but in real life, no. And that would result in the bill that he alluded to in changing a lot of rural districts to perform. There was a, in same rural district, they left out the statutory language for fireworks. And that was introduced. They wanted, they'd been doing it all the time, but they had a course of, or case of enforcement last year, and their attorney could not prosecute because of their statutory capability or limitation. Now it's in. So it technically would be an impact, but none that anyone or assumed was there already.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you for adjourned. Session on this bill, and evidently, in talking to Senator Hurd out in the hall, that he has a handout that he would like to. And I might too mention to you the two senators that Representative Jones should be here in just a moment. He's testifying in another committee. Fred, do you have some comments you'd?
Well, I understand that we're to consider the liberalization of the fireworks, the Oregon fireworks law.
Yes.
And as I've been thinking about it, I certainly it's not no secret what my position is, but I, watched this session as we've passed like child restraint bills, as we've dealt with the question of letting children ride in backs of pickups, and all the things that we've done in terms of safety. And as I see this bill, as I listened to the explanation the other day about Washington has liberalized their law, so we should do the same thing. I just can't believe that we're expressing in one session all of this concern about the safety of children, and then saying, on the other hand, here's some black powder and some matches, and go out and play with it. Now, we do have, in terms of Oregon, we have a minimum fireworks law, which I have the figures here from the state fire marshal, which indicates, even with that liberal law, that looking at cities like Albany, Bend, Grants Pass, Klamath Falls, Portland by hospital, figures are very good up there, Salem, Eugene, in 1982, from June 23rd to July 20th, just that 4th of July period, there were 70 accidents involving fireworks, things like hand injuries, ear injuries, eye injuries, hand and face injuries, 4 hospitalized at Dwyer Hospital in Portland, 12
hospitalizations or where at least maybe emergency care at Best Kaiser, 6 at Emmanuel, 4 at Good Samaritan Hospital, 3 at Providence and St. Vincent, and 1 at Eastmoreland, 1 at Holiday Park, 2 at Woodland Park. It's spread throughout the city in that area now, and that would be one certainly that would be close to Washington. And I don't know how many of those injuries involved Washington fireworks, but just with the law that we had 70 accidents throughout the state. So I think, you know, that's important to remember. And then I want to call your attention to this chart that I've handed out, which comes from the city of Seattle, just the city of Seattle. The figures we were able to get, as you see, when the law was changed there about 1981, the injury rate was about 28. And then when the law was changed, looking at 81 and 82, in 81 they had 25 injuries due to fireworks. In 1982 they had 71. And on fires, in 1981 they had 59 attributed to fireworks. And in 1982, 124. So you can see the change, just the line just goes off the chart. Now, it's true that what's proposed in this bill wouldn't go as far as what Washington has. But you recall the question I had the other day of who makes what we have in the state of Oregon? Well, obviously, the same people that make what they use in the state of Washington.
No doubt.
And I just can't believe that if they're proposing that we liberalize our law even, say, halfway to Washington State, they're not going to be back in the next session asking us to go still further. So I think what we're talking about is a basic safety thing. We're concerned that kids won't have, on one hand, the good sense to stay in a pickup truck when their folks are driving down the highway so they pass a law. But then we restrain them in their cars and do all those things in this session. And then we pass this law, which places, I think, more dangerous things in their hands than even what we've been talking about this session. So. I am opposed to the bill. I understand that there are some things in there that we might want to consider separately. And if that's the case, fine, let's amend out the business about liberalizing fireworks and go from there. But I will oppose it in full committee on the floor of the Senate if we get that far. I just am adamantly opposed to changing the law.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hurd. Senator McCoy, you haven't been in on any of this other, but you've if you can pose some questions either to Senator Hurd or myself or Dan, we'd all try our best to bring you up to speed on this. You certainly understand Senator Hurd's position. It's been my position that because there are a great number of people on the House floor that have decided that they would like this bill. In fact, we have a vote count, Senator McCoy, for however accurate that is. But there are people that want it. And I think it was carefully stated by Senator Hurd, but I would like to point that out, that this does not go as far as, of course, as Washington. They have everything that you and I have ever heard of. Since childhood up there, they have Roman candles and huge firecrackers and all that sort of dangerous thing. And this, they're calling it family fireworks here in the testimony that we had. Cylinder fountains and cone fountains and torches and ground spinners and things like that. No loud firecrackers or that sort of thing. But I would try and answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, the first question I would ask is that who is the Oregon Independence Day Association?
That is a group of that has a lobbyist, and they are the wholesalers and the people that put on the fireworks displays like they might have down along the river in Portland or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's what they are. That's close enough anyway, Senator McCoy, to give you an idea about that. Senator Hurd has given us some information, Benny, and has said that he's adamantly opposed to the bill. And I've stated that that there are a number of people in the legislature, in the House in particular, that do want this bill, and there are those of us here, I think, on the committee. It may be that we'll have to send it out with a without any recommendation and see how we do in full committee if that's the pleasure of the committee. But
Mr. Chairman, one other thing I'd like to mention is that, of course, the state fire marshal's position is solid opposition to this bill.
To certain parts of it, as you've suggested too. Yes, you've suggested there may be some parts that are the fire marshal and you would support.
Mr. Chairman, who other than the people who, the lobbyists, I suppose, for the Oregon Independence Day Association, who else was in favor of the bill?
There are lots of Representative Representative Hooley came in and gave us some good testimony on her feelings in favor of it, and what else, Dan? That's all that I recall. Yes.
That's all I have.
All right. Danny, you have any comments you might want to make about it?
No. And then I would, you know, whenever you get ready, I'll just move it.
All right.
What happened?
All right. The
Senator Hurd and I have another an appointment in about 10-15 minutes.
All right. We'll be through by then, or we'll just adjourn. The word possess in the bill, the fire marshal and you, Senator Hurd, are in favor of. The other determination we must make are the fees, which are ten and 500. Yes, and word possess, and the other, of course, is the increase in the number, and not the number particularly, but the increase in the different sort of items that that would be for sale in retail and also wholesale.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, there is another amendment to the bill that would clarify a piece of law that allows rural districts to
come up. Have you talked to him about this, Dan? What he's talking about? All right, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Pat Franzen, representing the State Fire Marshal's Office. There is a section in the bill, I believe it's section 5.
On page 5, subsection 2, right there, and section 8.
We got the bill, that was Hannah Grossman speak up. At least, I don't have the bill with me after all my package, I got the wrong one with me, but the modifies or says that a rural fire protection district, thank you, for the purpose, it's line 5 of page 5, clarifies an oversight in the existing statutes that does not allow a rural fire protection district to enforce state fire marshal laws dealing with fireworks. And this is something that was picked up by the rural directors and one of the fire marshals of the rural fire protection district through trying to prosecute fireworks storage and handling in their district. And this is supported
too. This clarifies it. It says that they has the same enforcement authority as state fire marshal.
Yes, right.
And that's just was that placed in at your request?
That was placed in at the request of Rural Fire Protection, Multnomah County 10, and the Independent Dealers Association supported it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones' motion didn't prevail, and if you would accept it, I'd make a motion after that to have Dan work with the fire marshal to get those portions of the bill that are needed out and into a bill for us.
All right. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
At the present time,
yes,
you are permitted to have displays all over the state, anywhere you want, have displays.
Yeah.
With a permit, yes, but it...
Yeah, with a permit.
That's $10.
The purpose of the bill, then, is to sell all of these little things to anybody. Where would the outlets be? Would they be done through, would it be done through stores, or would they have to set up their own shops, or what?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the way the bill is written now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what it would do for a period of a few days from June 22nd to July 6th, allow that certain other items not now permitted, and not necessarily those items you'd find at a public display, to be sold at your normal neighborhood stand, the little grocery store market display, whatever. Right now, only sparklers, snakes, and similar smoke-producing devices and caps can be sold year-round. It does not require a permit. We do regulate the storage and handling of those because they are a combustible material, Class C explosive. During that June 22nd, July 6th, it would permit then these other devices described here to be sold at all these stands around. It would set up a permit for that, which would mean that we would have to issue permit allowing those certain devices meeting the specifications of the statute. And it's pretty specific of how many grains, the size, and the combination of those things. Public displays is another thing entirely, and they use some Class C and mostly Class B explosives, heavy mortars, heavy rockets, large devices, not the kind of thing you would find in a stand. Not normally the kind of thing you find right now going on across the river, but would be all Class C type fireworks, of which sparklers are, of which firecrackers are. M80s are Class C fireworks, but they are not included in this bill. This bill now does not have anything that flies or anything that explodes. But it does have, all the devices do emit showers of sparks, similar to a sparkler, only in much larger amounts.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think that I, too, see no advantage in having these things.
All right. Let me state it then for the record that Senator McCoy and Senator Hurd oppose the bill as now drafted, and myself and Denny Jones favor the bill as drafted. Is that correct?
Right.
That's correct. All right. Then that would make it 2-2, and Dan, are we going to let you vote today or no?
It takes three members of the subcommittee to get a bill out.
Yes. Even without recommendation. So, all right, the bill then fails in subcommittee, and then we would look at making some amendments to that.
I would move that we have staff work with fire marshal to work on amendments that. I think we all agree on, and then maybe bring those back to us.
The amendments to that would be the word, leave that in the possess, and...
Where is
that? Somebody
that's
tell
me. That's in section 4.
Section 4.
Oh, line 34.
Line 34.
You mean take that out?
No. They need that. The fire marshal needs that.
It's already in?
Yeah. Well, it's new. It's new. Yes. Yes, Danny. And would we have any? Would we have any need for the fees then to be either up or down, or leave them as? Well, you can.
Well, why don't we make the attempt to, if necessary, adjust the fees to the extent that it's necessary to recover the administrative costs associated with this.
All right. And then the other one would be the control for the rural fire people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And that's already in there.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I ask John McCulley here to respond?
Sure.
To the,
of course. You can pose a question to him if you'd like. Well, John.
You know, on the
on the amended bill.
My name is John McCulley. I'm representing the Oregon Independence Day Association. Our primary concern on the amended bill would be the fee increases. That was, of course, the reason that the House Judiciary Committee opted to go with $25.69 and put $21.87, the Fire Marshal's original bill, into $25.69. It was basically the opposition they got from the
changes,
small stores.
On changes fee increases. In the fees are 10, 10, and 500? Is that what's in the new
yes,
bill?
Yes, that's right. We all understand now,
Mr. Chairman, that the A.N. Gross House Bill 2569 includes two fee changes. The amendments which John McCulley proposed to you the other day when you had the hearing on the bill were to delete the $20 fee that would be collected for the wholesaler at the wholesale level and insert $500. Mm-hmm. And then for the people, typically the public nonprofit organizations would put on the displays to reduce that $20 charge down to $10. Now there's another layer in here, I believe, and that's all these little lean-tos with chicken wire around them that sell the things. Do you permit those?
This law permits it right now. We do not have permit fee or charge for those stands. Under this bill, with those six or items or so that are increased, there would have been a permit fee for that service.
Well, then, Mr. So Chairman, what's different about this bill than what John McCulley recommended in those amendments? He recommended the 500, as I remember.
As I say, they're 20 and 20, and he suggested that they go to 500 for the wholesalers and 10 for the public displays. Those amendments are not yet in the bill, my point.
And we have just suggested that we would adjust the fees by cooperation here to carry the additional work in the agency.
I'll examine that.
Yeah.
That would be my recommendation.
Yes.
Unless you want to subsidize this with the fire insurance premium taxes.
No.
Okay. So they have to do the work. Somebody's got to pay the bill. We'll make it so that the fees are commensurate with the cost of the program.
Mr. Chairman, if I may comment, part of the amendment that Mr. McCulley brought in was agreement between the Industry Association and us, primarily the $500 kick, and that was partly an enforcement desire. It would lessen the impact on the civic organization for public displays, but also restricted the opportunist from becoming involved in.
I might add for the record, Mr. Chairman, that discussion was based on the original bill, the A.N. Gross bill, and not the action that you're considering now.
Yes, that's true. All right, any other comments, members of the committee?
I guess that I would just ask John McCulley a point blank question.
Sure.
You can count as well as the rest of us. Now, do you want this amended bill or do you don't want any?
Well, Mr. Chair, based on the fee increases, which I think largely drew the attention to this issue at the first hearing in the Judiciary Committee, the people, of course, that I represent would be opposed to those fee increases.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that there could be some opposition based on that if it were to get to the House floor. So I guess basically what I'm saying, with those fee increases, we basically would oppose the bill.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, the fee increases that you speak of are from $10 to $20?
Mr. Chair, from $5 to $20. Fourfold increase over what is being paid now.
From $5 to $20.
Mr. Chair, if I may comment to Senator McCoy, presently the fee is $5, of which 90% of it is returned to local government. $5 fee for sales, $5 fee for public display, 50 cents of that is retained by the office for handling, 450 returned back to the local government.
The cost of processing just that check alone eat that up. The committee chose not to return it to local government and keep the fees for the function of the fire marshal, and then kick the fees up at a level commensurate with the activity. And so there would be a, needs to be some work in that area. Our concern is just to make it a cost-effective function.
All right. Let's do, Dan, as we discussed here, and look at those amendments and see if we can come up with a bill that, that we can agree on. And with that, we're adjourned. Okay.